We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Jumping off into hour two here of Sports Talk, our second and final hour. Handing things off to the LSU Sports Radio Network at 6 o'clock for pregame coverage between LSU and Nichols at the box. 6:30 first pitch. Bobby and Christian hanging out with you. Phone lines are open at 504-260-1870. Text 870-870. Bobby, I'm kind of in line with VR, where a lot of these national experts and pundits, these bracketology experts, have Yale upsetting LSU. I go back to our interview last night with John Brady. On athleticism alone, forget coaching. LSU's a better team. And while Yale can cause some problems, I just think the LSU, even without Will Wade, gets it done against Yale in the opener.
Well, they have, but Yale has the season roster, a lot of experience. But yeah, they just got to win down low and not settle. Be making a few 3-pointers, yes, but don't settle. You know what's frustrating with LSU at times when they get a lead, and I'm talking about a double digit lead, then they, I don't know if it's lackadaisical or that's where I think Will Wade could come into play, where he said, no, we need to keep pounding it, down low. I mean, the bottom line, the percentages go up. But the one thing, listen, a lot of people hating on LSU because that'd be almost the NCAA's worst nightmare, that LSU would continue to get national recognition by winning. I think they're in the toughest region when you look at the East. I mean, you know, however you look at the first round, second round, Sweet 16, Elite Eight, but it could be a possibility. Talk about Blue Bloods. If there'd be a scenario that LSU would get, I'm just saying, speculating here, the Sweet 16, and you'd beat the likes of Michigan State, then get the Elite Eight and beat Duke, and go to the Final Four, whoa. Everybody be hating on LSU. We'd be like the Darth Vader assembly because of where we're at right now. Oh, LSU's cheating.
What, Bobby? There is a sense of entitlement in these tournaments, in particular the NCAA men's basketball tournament, of these Blue Bloods are almost like it's, What are you kidding me? You should automatically give us a bid to the Elite Eight and the Final Four. Well, I mean, a lot of them feel a Sweet 16. A lot of them feel like they just automatically belong there, like they're ordained to be there.
Yeah, like the Blue Bloods, and obviously I think they have a great opportunity to get there. Would be the likes of, obviously Duke, North Carolina, now a Blue Blood they're in the tournament, but like Kansas, they have fourth seed. The Jayhawks, you look at the Indiana Hoosiers, they're not relevant. They're not even involved. But so you look at those type programs. But I don't know, Christian, this could be a magical season. The reason why I say this, because they're kicking off the tournament at Veterans Memorial Arena in Jacksonville, Florida. Good memories for Tiger basketball fans. That was the venue where LSU's magical Final Four run began in 2006.
A little karma there.
13 years later, yes, look where you're playing. To kick off the tournament now. And I look at the selection committee, even all that adversity with Will Wade and all that, LSU is ranked as the number 11 team in the tournament. And so you look at Yale, ranked number 55. So yeah, just on paper, LSU should win. But like I was saying earlier, you look at Yale, you look at their roster, one of the most veteran teams in the tournament, then Matt, a reigning Ivy League champion, they know how to win, them and Harvard. Tit for tat, so to speak. But you look at the Yale Bulldogs, they have a roster with four seniors and four juniors. And you look at their consistent starters, their upperclassmen, and all of them average 10 or more points. So that's telling me they're not selfish. They're going to understand maybe what it takes to win, and they're not going to panic. Now, I thought this was interesting. I don't know if this is BS, and I don't think it is. But Mike Krzyzewski, all of a sudden at Duke, he says they have a kid. Mark, help me out with this pronunciation. Mia Oni. He's averaging basically almost 18 points a game.
Yeah, Oni.
Oni. And Coach Krzyzewski said he's a first-round draft pick in the NBA. Well, so that's not chopped liver.
Right.
I mean, that means that cat
can play.
Yes. And so what I thought was interesting, you look a little LSU and Yale Bulldog history. They've only met playing round ball once. And Yale won that game. Christian, what year you're born?
78.
You went well, way before you're born. Yale and LSU played basketball in a game in 1969 in the Rainbow Classic in Hawaii. And guess what happened? Yale won. Despite Pete Maravich scored 34 points. Pistol Pete scored 34. We talk about nicknames.
Right.
Pistol Pete had 34, and the Yale Bulldogs beat him in 1969. So I just thought that was interesting. But you know, the Ivy League coach Wade knows him. I didn't realize this, that Will Wade, you know, you look at the bio and all that, he was an assistant at Harvard from 2007 to 9. So he knows how tough Yale is, and just having, you know, that experience and to be able to know Yale, Harvard, and all that. And
Bobby, finish the sentence for me.
Yeah.
Finish the sentence for me. It's the NCAA men's basketball
tournament.
There you go.
Yeah. You like the way I say tournament?
Uh-huh.
But this is what Will Wade said. Hey, they're well coached, and they're going to play a fast-paced game. And I think a fast-paced game benefits LSU.
Bobby and Christian back here on Sports Talk on WWL.
In the tournament.
Text here at 870-870-6225. Can you guys enlighten us on, that don't know, what are or slash is Blue Bloods? Y'all keep referencing this. The likes of the perennial powers in college basketball. The Dukes.
Like a priority.
The North Carolina.
Tar Heels.
Kentucky's.
Kansas, Jayhawks.
Michigan State, Kansas. The ones that you see typically making runs.
And have
Gonzaga.
A lot of history. Gonzaga, like UCLA, like John. No, even like John Wooden, UCLA. No, come on. You can even think of like half a century. You think of USC Trojan football.
Right.
And you think of UCLA basketball. Now, UCLA might be good in football, but it's not like what the expectations are. The same thing in the SEC. Kentucky Wildcats. Oh, they went to a bowl. Or, oh, wow, look at Kentucky. They have a chance in the SEC East in football.
Right.
But what do you expect in basketball?
I expect them to be in the Sweet 16, Elite 8, Final Four.
To win, to be an SEC champion. Mm-hmm. Then you go from there to win a national championship. So that's a blue blood. And you could do it in almost any sport. Like LSU is a blue blood in baseball.
Yes.
You know, you look at Texas, Longhorn tradition. The Hurricanes, University of Miami. Now, if you're going really old school, USC, Arizona State would be blue bloods in baseball. Obviously, we're more recent when LSU started having success. Stanford would be a blue blood
Wichita
in baseball.
State.
Yeah, so that's all it's worth.
But the blue bloods don't really exist in college baseball like they used to because, again, like we've talked about,
right.
The limited scholarships at 11.7. So it's not as, yes, LSU has
but
a lot of
but the expectations are
yes,
still there.
Yes, and the tradition is still there.
Right.
But, you know, teams like Coastal Carolina, the Chanticleers, I mean, they came out of nowhere a couple of years ago.
Yeah, but that was 1 year. But that's not, I can't be a blue blood. It's one flash
in
the pan.
They're not. But what I'm saying, though, is that it's harder in baseball to have those perennial blue bloods every year, opposed in basketball, it's not as difficult to achieve.
You see, what I look at, they've established enough that being a university where the expectations from the fan base. Like, well, what if LSU basketball, they say, oh, man, I just hope we win. I want to support a winner. Where LSU baseball, they demand a winner.
Right.
Football, they demand a winner. Same thing, Kentucky basketball demands a winner. Indiana Hoosier, basketball demands a winner.
Man,
now that's why they fired the coaches.
Right.
And then look at Indiana like football. What? Indiana football? What, Antoine Randall?
I mean, Tracy Porter, didn't he go to
Yeah,
Indiana?
That's what I mean. It's like you don't view it as a football school.
Right. Yeah, look, so. Name a school and I'll immediately associate it with either basketball, football, or baseball. Or
right.
Or a combination of two or three, or all three.
Or you look track and field country. God, I can't think of his name now. He was the sprinter, not the sprinter, the distant runner from Oregon. Prefontaine, they have the Oregon, I don't know if it's called the Oregon Relays or some big track meet in Oregon. That's blue blood track country. The
yeah.
Drake Relays. The Drake in Iowa. Drake, that's blue blood track and field. So you can get into all the sports. LSU's had a blue blood track and field program, both men and women. Then they had an outstanding coach from LSU leaves to go to Texas A&M. And so you look at the competition, you know, in track and field in the SEC. So, yeah, it does matter. To me, it all starts with what is the perception or what are the expectations with the fan base? If they look at, oh, I'll go support my school, I hope they win. But when all of a sudden they're not winning, man, they get mad.
Trust me, I hear you.
They're
on
not
the,
accepting it.
I hear you on the LSU baseball fans, because if they drop one game of a three-game series in the SEC, it's I get tweets, fire Paul Maneri.
Well, they're getting ready to play the Nicholls State tonight. Now, you know, the midweek game, to me, I don't even look at that. It depends who's pitching and how it unfolds. It's a big feather in Nicholls State's cap if they win, kind of when Northwestern State and Natchitoches beat LSU, those midweek games. So when you look at that, yeah, the fans are like, what's going on? You know, how you lose to Nicholls State tonight. How can we have any momentum?
How can that happen?
How can we have any momentum going into Athens to play Georgia?
No, that's why tonight's big for LSU.
Yeah, and big.
Look, they have, in four tries this year, they're winless on the road.
And, Christian, I don't know if you, I was looking at this poll. It just goes to show, you know, preseason polls, where they're ranked. A collegiate baseball poll, you know who's the top SEC program right now?
Georgia.
No, Mississippi State.
Yeah,
they
that too.
They got Mississippi State at number two.
Vanderbilt.
They got Vanderbilt at six, LSU at seven, Georgia at nine, Arkansas at 10, Auburn at 12, Florida at 13. You got A&M at 19. So,
see, I've seen polls where Georgia's ahead of LSU.
Right, but I'm just saying they're in that realm. So I'm like, just don't get swept right now. Boy, that'd be a big feather in LSU's program in Paul Maneri's cap if you go to Athens, considering where Georgia's at, to win two out of three. Right now?
Hell yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Look, that's why that sweep over Kentucky is so big, Bobby, because it gives you grace. So, for example, if they only get one out of three against Georgia, if they only get one out of three,
right,
it's almost like you got two out of three because you swept Kentucky. Does that make sense?
Right.
In terms of overall SEC wins. Because you probably weren't expecting to go 3-0 against Kentucky.
Right.
Yeah, so it gives you a little bit of...
You want to win the series. Two
it gives
three.
You a little bit of grace to fall back on should you stub your toe. And it doesn't get any easier the following week. Where are they going? Starkville to play Mississippi State.
On the road.
Two back-to-back SEC series on the road for LSU. So the expectations should be, hey, if you can get two out of the three in one of these series, get two out of the three.
And now, Christian, maybe you could explain this better, because I was never a good enough baseball player, but like, look at LSU right now. Now, going to Georgia, and you look at the preseason, what we were talking about, LSU baseball. Wouldn't you have thought already that they'd have won at least a game on the road?
Well, yeah, they played four. I figured they would have got one.
Yeah,
got one against Texas and probably beaten Northwestern State.
Yeah, so you think not like
they'd have been 500 on the road.
So not over. I mean, so no. I wonder, how does that work in players' minds? Like, could you know the crowds could come into play? But do you think that really makes a difference? Like
for freshmen,
going at Georgia
for freshmen, for sure. Okay. I mean, like guys like Landon Marceau. Absolutely.
Right.
For guys like Zach Watson and Josh Smith, that doesn't bother them. They're used to playing in front of 10,000 people every weekend, and
right,
whether home or away. They played in the College World Series, TD Ameritrade Park, with 20,000 people there. So it bothers the freshmen. And it surprised me that it bothered Landon Marceau, though, because he pitched at Destrehan High School, which they got a lot of support.
Right.
You know, they get a lot of fans that come out there and watch Landon Marceau when he was at Destrehan High School. So it was surprising to see that. But I think Landon Marceau, going back to last week when he pitched against Northwestern State, again, not the most hostile of environments, but still, that was the biggest crowd that Northwestern State
had in Natchitoches, without
a
doubt.
So pitching on the road in that environment, I think, helps a guy like Landon Marceau.
Well, Christian, a couple of texts right here before we go to the break. Looking at 8208, obviously Alabama and the Fighting Irish, Notre Dame, Blue Bloods in football. Now, this is kind of comical in a sense. This is 2996. I'm a name of school, Tulane. I don't see them as a blue blood in anything. But if Tulane would be a blue blood, what would it be in? Baseball?
Because
it gives the fans hope.
That's my issue. Is there's no reason why Tulane baseball can't be in the NCAA baseball tournament almost every year, or hosting a regional or super regional almost every year.
To be in the tournament, to be in the hunt.
Yeah, there's no reason why.
Make at least a regional.
When Micah Owings was there, this is prior to Hurricane Katrina, they had a nice little team. Ended up beating Rice, going to the College World Series in the Super Regional. I covered that Super Regional. I remember it.
Well,
there's
right
no
now,
reason why they can't do it again.
I'm just hoping that Tulane doesn't steal Coach Schlesinger from UNO. You know, you talk about prospects and who would take over that program. I guarantee you Coach Schlesinger would win a game in a conference. Coach Dunleavy, how can you not win a game?
I don't know.
What?
CBS,
it's like you almost
headlines.
Have to try not to win.
Back here on Sports Talk, Nick Easton, Saints offensive lineman, center, and guard, will join us in about 10 minutes at Making It Look Easy on Twitter. You know, he he forged his intestinal fortitude a little bit, or his toughness, because he would get beat by his older brother on the basketball court in their driveway. So that's kind of what sparked the competitive fire for Nick Easton.
So, and wait, well, is that the right word, handle?
What?
Like, would you say his handle?
Yeah, Twitter handle, yeah.
What is it?
Making it look easy.
Making it look easy. No, that's sweet. I mean, that's
pretty solid, yeah.
Nick Easton, making it look easy.
Making it look easy.
Well, the thing I'm most impressed with, and obviously, you know, it doesn't come into play when you physically on a football field, but you got to be on top of things mentally because you are the quarterback at offensive line. What I'm most impressed with, Chris, and he went to Harvard.
Smart guy.
And you playing at the highest level in the NFL, and you went to Harvard?
You know, he came to New Orleans post-Katrina as a middle schooler to help provide relief.
Christian, you know way more than me.
No, I mean, I just think
awesome.
The guy's well-rounded. You know, he
a good citizen.
If he wasn't playing football, he'd be successful in just about any business he would decide to enter.
Interesting to see. What are you? What's your degree in? So
I looked it up earlier. I got it in my notes. I'll find it. He has some.
Foreign affairs. Or something.
It's like it's a legit. Legit degree.
We'll bring it up. Yeah.
Yeah. Phone lines are open at 504-260-1870. Text 870-870. LSU head football coach Ed Orgeron gets a nice extension, 2 years extension, $4 million per year extension. Good move or bad move? Cast your vote online in our Blue Runner Gumbo opinion poll or call us at 504-260-1870.
But that's part of the poll. How would it be a bad move? You could say...
fans think that he's not the right guy.
Well, you got to base on whatever you've done for him lately. It's not a bad move when you're trying to recruit and you have to have consistency. So it cannot be a bad move. It could be a move that I would take a wait-and-see approach, but it's not a bad move.
Well, I think some people that would say it's a bad move is because they're still thinking about that huge buyout of Les Miles.
Well, that's not Coach O's fault. It's not that they screwed up with Les Miles.
That's Joe Oliva. That's the athletic director. Yeah. That's not Coach O. And look, Bobby, I've kind of turned around on Coach O. I had a lot of questions about if he was the right guy to lead this program. And after turning in the season he had last year, albeit he didn't get 10 wins in the regular season but got 10 wins in the bowl game, the recruiting class looks strong. He missed out on a couple. That's going to happen. I feel confident saying they're closer to Alabama than they were 2 years ago. I guess now, how close? I don't know. And that's kind of a relative term when you consider how good Alabama is. But I think that he's getting things going in the right direction.
Well, and you look overall how the season unfolded. What's the big negative? And some LSU fans can't handle this. It was just a very humiliating loss to Alabama. You can't sugarcoat it. It was just an ass whipping. It was like very humbling. And some people can't handle it. Doesn't matter what you do, even in the other games. Doesn't matter that you kicked off the season, you beat Miami.
No, you're measured by Alabama. You're measured by how you do against Alabama.
Yeah, and you look at what you do in the conference and all that. And even, God, I was so frustrated, Christian, because you were on the edge of your seat watching that Texas A&M game. Because LSU has had Texas A&M's number, and then...
they got hosed on that.
Yeah, it was almost kind of like NFC Championship game. Like, what?
Rough year for so
what's a
football
catch?
Fans between LSU and the Saints. That's
especially
for sure.
How that game unfolded. So.
Nick Easton, Saints center and guard, will join us after the break here on WWL. Mark Menard at Master Control. We found out that Bobby has a new nickname, or another nickname, I should say, aside from the Cajun Cannon. He's the Cajun economist. He's got a minor in economics, while Nick Easton has a major in economics.
Yeah, and he went to Harvard, not Harvard on the Bayou, but actually Harvard. And so I'm sure the economy classes, and he did graduate with an economics degree, so I end up having a minor in economics. So that's why Christian's joking the Cajun economist.
Well, yeah. I mean,
but Christian, do you know what the supply and demand curve is?
I don't know exactly how to explain it. No.
And macro and microeconomics.
I know a little bit about macro and micro.
Oh, okay.
Enough to be somewhat dangerous.
So I might know a little more. I learned the basics. But the bottom line is that I wanted to be eligible all the time and had a very favorable economics teacher that we had kind of a package deal.
We'll get to that in a few moments. I bet you this guy, Nick Easton, Saints offensive lineman, knows about the supply and demand curve and along with the micro and macro economics. Nick, how are you? Congratulations on joining the Saints.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. So I first want to start about, tell me about these basketball games that you would have with your brother in a driveway that kind of forged your toughness a little bit.
Good question. There's not much to tell, man. You know, just a little after-school basketball like everybody else did. My brother's a year older. He had a little bit longer reach at the time, so he'd block a lot of my shots. So learned how to get a good hook shot in.
Now, Nick, were you a late bloomer? Obviously, you were smart, and you know you went to Harvard. But being from North Carolina, was it that education was over football? Because Ivy League players don't get scholarships. So, just would you get academic scholarship, or because you're playing at the NFL level, the highest level, why didn't you maybe go to school like in the ACC or even the SEC, as far as purely what you'd view as a football school instead of an Ivy League program?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say I was a late bloomer. I didn't have a lot of, I would say, an excessive amount of recruiting going on in high school. And my parents always stressed to me that, you know, academics were the most important thing. So, yeah, I mean, it was a pretty natural progression. Harvard, looked at my tape, looked at my grade point average, and then that's kind of how they make their determination. So I had some Ivy League interest, and I mean, how do you say no to Harvard?
Right. Nick, your first experience in New Orleans was as a middle schooler, right? Post-Hurricane Katrina?
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
What, I mean, you were down here providing relief, et cetera, and what do you think? You saw it right after Katrina, and now you visited New Orleans, and it looks like an entirely different city, I'm sure.
Completely different from what I remember. It looks like it's made a huge recovery.
Now, Nick, looking at, you know, your background and what it took to get where you're at right now, and obviously taking advantage of the opportunity with the Vikings. Look, I'd say an underrated player that if you unseat a starter like Alex Boone, that kind of speaks for itself. But it seems like a couple of times just had some bad luck. I know you had, a broken ankle in 2017, and then having the neck injury, the neck injury for last season. So in training camp. So where are you at right now? You ready to roll? You physically 100% or what?
Yeah, I'm feeling great physically. I mean, if the injury's part of the game, everybody battles them. Hopefully, I've got the worst of that out of the way, so I can just have a few healthy years ahead of me here.
Nick, what was your visit like with the Saints before you signed with them?
It was awesome, man. You know, coming down from Minnesota, it was pretty cold up there, and then getting down in the 80-degree heat was pretty nice. And then a lot of smiling faces, a lot of people excited about football, a beautiful facility, a beautiful city. Pretty much sold itself.
Have you thought about, you mentioned that 80-degree heat, have you thought about 110-degree heat index in July and August when you're going through training camp?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's different challenges everywhere you play. So I'm just excited to get the ball out there and play again.
Well, Nick, I can tell you this day and age, though, if the heat index is 110, Sean Payton will have you at the indoor facility. They're not going to wear you down, and he's smart about that. But, Nick, looking at the flexibility that you have, I mean, have they told you, are you a pure center, or obviously the more you could do? Because I was looking at 26 years of age, what you played, 665 snaps at guard, 463 at center for the Vikings. You look at that 16-17 season. Do you view yourself more as a center guard center, or purely a center right now? What are they having you focus on? Obviously, you come in here learning a new offense. You got to be the quarterback and offensive line to make the calls, and that's with Max Unger. And that's one thing. I'm not putting any pressure on you, Nick, but we've had outstanding centers here under Sean Payton and Drew Brees since 2006. Going back to Jeff Fahey, he was the highest-paid center going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I think you can handle it. I think you can weather the storm. But are you primarily just focused on center right now or what?
Yeah, look, see, I don't even have a playbook in my hand yet. But so I think we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves with all these questions. I haven't even met any of the quarterbacks yet other than Teddy in a previous job. So anyway, I think – I see myself primarily as a center. That's what I've played every single preseason and off season in my career in the NFL, as well as my senior year of college. I just feel comfortable there. I've played guard. I don't mind doing it. I'd like center a little better if I had the choice myself.
Nick Easton, Saints offensive lineman, here on Sports Talk at Making It Look Easy on Twitter. Explain that one, man. That's an interesting, unique Twitter handle.
Yeah, you know, I made Twitter a long time ago, and it's kind of a long story, inside joke with some friends, but I won't give you the full deal. I did learn that the nickname of New Orleans is the Big Easy, so that's kind of an interesting coincidence.
Nick, I don't mean to insult your intelligence with this question. Do you know what a beignet is?
As a big guy and as a relatively smart guy, I am familiar with the beignet, and I am a fan.
Okay, all right. Crawfish? Had a crawfish yet?
Have not had a crawfish, no.
Yeah, well, we're gonna have crawfish balls. We'll, teach you how to pinch the heads and suck the heads, pinch the tails, do all that. We'll get that worked out. But Nick, looking at what you've accomplished so far and as expectations, and just talk about the pressure of playing in the NFL and playing at the highest level. I mean, I know much is given, much is required. But getting an opportunity to play with a future Hall of Famer and Drew Brees, and just talk about that potential experience going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I've spoke about this before, but the game has a ton of highs and lows, man, and it's pretty all-consuming when you're in that season. So, you know, I'm looking forward to putting everything I got out there this season, and it's such an unbelievable opportunity to play with legends of the game like the Saints have, so I'm really excited about that opportunity, and I can't wait to get out there and practice with the guys.
Now, Nick, what comes more natural, I should say, for you? Because all what I've read, that you're very solid in pass protection, run blocking at times, depending on the matchups, could be a little more difficult. When you talk about strengths and weaknesses, would you say that pass blocking probably is to the forefront, number one? And the reason why I say that, because we've always been able to protect Drew Brees inside out, the guards and the center working together. As far as pass pro, has that been a strength for you, considering when you came in the NFL?
You know, I like to think of myself as a balanced player, and I think every O-lineman who makes it to the league has to have a balanced approach to everything they do. It's just complementary football. You got to be able to run the ball, to pass the ball effectively, and vice versa. So, you know, as far as a strength, I'm not sure one is stronger than the other. I don't know where you got your scouting report from, but I like to pride myself on doing both.
Nick, favorite comedy? Go.
Oh, God. Gut reaction says Step Brothers.
Okay, all right.
I Love You Man, too, though.
I haven't seen I Love You Man, but of course I've seen Step Brothers. And so you like Will Ferrell's kind of sense of humor, like the Anchorman, et cetera?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense. All right, I get it. Now I understand the personality a little bit of Nick Easton. Good stuff there. You can't go wrong with Step Brother. Bob, you got anything else?
No, I'm just Nick, I said your number one asset was that I know you're going to know what you're doing. And to have a chance, everyone physically could play in the NFL. But especially if you're playing offensive football, you got to know what you're doing. You know, people say like, a football player. No, if you play offensive football in the NFL, you have to know what you're doing. And that's one thing I'm not worried about. Once you get that playbook, I think you truly will be that quarterback of the offensive line.
Yeah, man, just looking forward to get my hands on the ball again and playing ball with these guys.
Nick Easton, Saints offensive lineman. Once again, congratulations and welcome to New Orleans.
All right, thanks so much, guys.
All right, you bet. Right, we'll step away and come back. That is Nick Easton, Saints offensive lineman, newly inked center/guard. This is Sports Talk on WWL. All right, winding down here on Sports Talk before we push out of here, hand things off to the LSU Sports Radio Network. Want to thank Mark Bernard at Master Control, Stephen Geller as well for putting together the program, and our executive producer and program director, Diane Newman. Brian in Covington, I apologize, we can't get to your call. We do not have the time as we're getting ready to go to LSU Sports Radio Network. My first impression of Nick Easton, all business.
He's a little pompous, but ain't nothing wrong.
I wouldn't say pompous.
Because he's the smartest guy in the room. Nothing wrong with that. Yeah. I mean,
he's definitely the smartest guy.
They have other people that are evaluating, and they have film on him. He is not as good a run blocker as a pass blocker. The film, The Big Eye in the Sky Don't Lie, it might be very humbling.
Oh, I don't know where you got your information from.
Well, people who do this for a living, Pro Football Focus and all that. So,
Bobby and Christian, that's a wrap here on Sports Talk Semper Fi. I'm out. Bobby, do you think?
Bon nuit, les gens. Good night, people. Who dat?
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.